Hi, this is Katie Day, and welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women across the globe. Sometimes it is the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh. Sometimes they may make you cry. They will always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing Pam Neiman. As principal at Neiman Studio, Pam is committed to building quality projects, relationships, and communities. With over 30 years of experience, she has completed architecture and interior projects in K-12, higher education, healthcare, government, commercial, and transportation markets. Her international experience includes financial, technology, and transportation projects in Asia. Pam graduated from UC Davis with a Bachelor of Science in Environmental Design and has been an IIDA professional member since 1987. Her proven track record is evidenced by repeat work and referrals from clients, including a whole list of institutions here: Caltech, USC, UCLA, UCI, Cal Poly Pomona, Cal State Dominguez Hills, City of Hope, Kaiser, County of Los Angeles, City of Los Angeles, City of Santa Monica, John Wayne Airport, Southern California Edison, and the RAND Corporation. Pam is immediate past president of the Southern California chapter of IIDA. Time with her family and friends is precious. While connecting the dots between career, family life, community and volunteer activities that make a difference in the lives of at-risk children. Pam, we finally got our Skype sorted out. Hurrah! And we're speaking. And I can hear you and you can hear me, the wonders of technology.
Across the Atlantic.
Yeah, something about that pond, isn't there? But it's really, really great to be speaking with you. And thank you for taking the time out of a hugely busy diary to speak with me. I just reading through the bio that you sent me and that those list of clients is amazing. But the one I want to start off with is the bit at the end, with community and volunteer activities that make a difference in the lives of at-risk children. Can you tell us more about what that is for you, what that means?
Oh, yeah. I think one of the things that I learned when my children were young was how important it was to, you know, care about children, love children, nurture children. And I wanted one for my children to see that it was important to give back. So very early on, I took it upon myself to get involved in a couple key organizations in Los Angeles that really do help the at-risk children. And one is 5 Acres right here in the Pasadena area. And it's a children's home that has probably over 1,200 at-risk children that they're supporting, either there on their campus or through adoption or through foster care. And just being involved in that program and seeing, you know, the emptiness or the sadness and the potential in young children, I knew that, you know, that was a role that I was going to play along with being a professional and a mother and a wife. So one of the things that I would just like to say about that for those who haven't touched that kind of a community is that it is so rewarding. It is a gift to the giver. So I've kept that as a part of my life, even as we talk about, you know, what life in the future is. I'm doing a lot with IIDA still in the future generation and the interior design programs here in Southern California, and thinking about how can we help them bridge into their career. So I could
Amazing.
Have a whole conversation about that, but it's very rewarding and just love doing.
Incredible. What do you do? What's the sort of activities? What do you personally do with these children?
The at-risk children. The ones at 5 Acres, they have a children's guild. And what that guild does is we provide activities and kind of support for the children that live on that campus. So if you can imagine, 5 Acres is a group, it's a home on a campus that's 5 acres.
Right.
That has 10 cottages. 5 are for girls and 5 are for boys. And the idea is these children, they're putting these children in environments that are close to what a family environment might look like. So each okay. home is like its own little family. And we adopt one of those cottages each year. So the group, the Children's Guild, probably adopts about 4 cottages a year.
Okay.
And we do monthly activities with them. We take them out. We are helping to create relationships with these children so they know there can be permanent adults mm-hmm. in their life, whether it's their parents or their grandparents or their aunts and uncles or friends like yeah. ourselves that are really, they're caring about them, guiding them. What led me to 5 Acres was the fact that my sister had worked in the Children's Dependency Court, and I had been a child advocate over there for individual children, which led to this. And so it's been very rewarding, and I stay involved in it at different levels over the years.
Amazing. Obviously the children grow up and eventually go off and have their own lives. Are you able to keep that connection going and kind of follow them through their adult life?
That's probably the sad part of the role that we have, because you do build connections with some of the children, but the idea is you want to prepare them to go into the family life that they're in. And we've had to be very careful in the different things that I've done with the children, is to really be able to respect the family that they go into, whether
right.
it's with grandma or aunt or foster. And they have found that it's not always that beneficial to try and stay close to their lives, but hopefully you've planted some good seeds in their lives. So no, I haven't been along with the children, other than, you know, maybe over a period of 3 or 4 years while they've been in the home.
Right, right. Yeah, and I can see why it wouldn't be wise to do that, because it is about giving them those skills to move on and settle into their new future, isn't it, really, for them?
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, hard, I should think, because it's very, very easy to get close and think of them as your own, so it must be quite hard as well as joyful to let them go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So tell us more about your career. IIDA, what does that stand for?
IIDA is the International Interior Design Association.
Right.
And that's an association that's based out of Chicago for professionals that are very interested in commercial design.
Right.
And with that, you know, we go through, after a certain amount of schooling and a certain amount of work experience, we take an exam, and once we pass the exam, then we become a professional member.
I see.
And it's just been, you know, important in my career to stay associated with IIDA and that community. Again, it really is a community for interior designers. And what I found with that, which touches on community again, is while my children were in college, understanding the importance of what that was to go from college to your professional career, I got very interested in how we could help students mm-hmm. in the community that were going to school for interior design, how we could help them bridge into the professional world and introduce them to mentors and get them internships and that kind of thing. And what we were able to do here in Southern California, we identified 28 schools throughout Southern California that had interior design programs from Santa Barbara down to San Diego. And we really pulled together a group that went into these schools and built what we called campus centers to support the students on campus and connect them to a lot of the resources that we have. And we were able in 1 year to build 7 campus centers.
Wow.
So that was a real, again, kind of rewarding thing. And over the years, this has been probably over the last 5 years, we've been able to really involve the students in individual mentoring, in portfolio reviews, in charrettes, design charrettes, both locally and on the West Coast. And this year, we're able to send a group of 5 students back to NeoCon in Chicago, where they're going to compete internationally.
Wow.
So those little baby steps, you know, that you take and kind of, you know, being really connected to your career, giving back in your community, and seeing, you know, what you can do to empower the next generation of interior designers.
That in itself is amazing. Do you, with your experience and your career in interior design at the level that you work, is there a gender preference to the career, or is it fairly equal?
I would definitely say that there's a gender what did you call it, like a gender? It's women, mostly women.
Okay, it is.
There are definitely interior designers that are men. Few of them are leaders. But I think the thing that's very interesting about my profession is we work so closely with architects, mm-hmm. and we work so closely with general contractors as well as, you know, our client groups that... it has made me very sensitive to the dynamics of groups and client teams that we're working with, and, you know, the gender makeup of the team,
yeah.
even though maybe there's more women in interior design.
Interesting, because the other professions that are part of that team to create a building are likely to be predominantly men.
Correct.
Architecture. I mean, you have a lot of women architects, but it still tends to be slightly more dominant for men. And of course, then you've got the whole building contractors and the surveyors and, you know, everything else that goes into creating a building from scratch. How have you found that dynamic change in your career?
As I was listening to you talk, I think the thing that really opened my eyes about the whole gender dynamics is the time that I had over in Singapore. You know, it was diversity, just the word diversity, because it was cultural, it was global, it hit as close to me as, you know, just being a single woman over in another country that was an expatriate working in an Asian office where you had to respect the mama-san of the office. You saw in large organizations that we were doing projects with, you saw, you know, people that had, you know, they were the T-boys, they were peons, they were drivers. And that really opened my eyes in a way that I think today I would say I'm very respectful of that. And I learned there that it's not just, you know, the role of the woman or the role of the man or the role of the profession, but it was really about how together we can build a successful project that created a work environment for the company. So recognizing that, it started, you know, early in my career, and it changes, you know, over the years. coming to Los Angeles from Northern California, there was a lot of change that I saw in that. And at that point in my life, when I decided to go out on my own, fairly soon after I came back from Singapore, I realized that just a woman running her own business had its own set of dynamics.
Oh boy, doesn't it though? Yeah, it really does. I mean, it's as you know, it's an area that I'm particularly passionate about, women in business, whether they're entrepreneurs or in the corporate world. And I've noticed a huge difference to when I started working, doing this kind of work back in the late 1980s to now. So, you know, talking sort of 26, 27 years of how it's shifted. But what's really interesting is that now I'm taking the work to different parts of the globe, that I'm witnessing what was happening here in the UK 20, 30 years ago is happening there now. So, you know, it's interesting when you say you were in Singapore, because that's one of the areas that we're exploring. I wonder if you would have a different experience if you were to work in Singapore today than you had back then, because you not only have you got the historical gender differences, but you've got a whole different culture to contend with. And that can be mind-boggling to get your head around, can't it, of knowing the differences. You know, I notice it when I go to India. I go with my partner, and when we go into a business meeting, I very quickly realized that if I didn't start speaking immediately, I was completely ignored, because every question was directed to him and not to me. It was automatic to speak to the man and not speak to the woman. So I thought, okay, I'm not used to this one. So I realized I had to make my impact on that meeting immediately. Otherwise, I was just forgotten. Of course, the longer you leave it, the more difficult it is to start speaking. So really interesting of then how you managed to handle that. I mean, that was quite something. You know, it's this culture shock, isn't it? Kind of hits you in the face.
Yeah, and you say that, and yet, you know what? I have probably three friends still, and this was back in 85, that are women in business around the world.
Right.
So there were women going, you know, individually to Singapore to work, and then going back out of Singapore working globally. So it was kind of interesting to acknowledge that as you're talking about it today, that it was, you know, years ago. I think the other thing that's probably impacted is that there's been such a change in, you know, what's going on in Asia and how Asia's, you know, coming here and we're going over there, that I'm sure that the dynamics, it's matured in a way.
Yeah.
And I would actually be curious if the hierarchy was still there, you know, in the offices the way it was, because that was really something very new for me and not anything that I grew up with. Everybody kind of worked together and you were equal. It wasn't who was at what level and who got what kind of, you know, a China cup where they'd get their tea versus a earthenware cup.
I mean, it's on those very basic fundamental things, isn't it, that the hierarchy is established. And yeah, it did your experience in Singapore have an impact on how you did business when you came back?
It probably gave me a broader view of what our profession was, and that we could work on, I could work on a much larger scale as an individual person. That's probably what's kept me in my own business, working on the kinds of projects I do. Being over there working for a small office, we would work on projects that might be in new 40-story buildings. And if there's a good, small, tight, committed team that respected and nurtured and collaborated together, you could do big things. And so with that, and just the idea of respecting everybody's role, coming to Los Angeles, to the big firms and the big projects here, I was able to bring kind of maybe a different perspective.
Interesting. Yeah. So you've been 30 years experience. How long have you been running your own studio?
I founded my company in 1985.
Oh, wow.
Here in Los Angeles.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. What, I mean, you've got an amazing list of clients. Does anything stick out as being a pivotal moment of real pride and success, or and particularly challenging?
The pride and success is probably going to start with my story about Kaiser.
Okay.
Kaiser Permanente is even big today in our medical community here, and watching what's happened with healthcare reform and everything. Mm. When I started my business, I knew that we wanted to identify clients that had multiple projects and or multiple properties. And as we identified them, we would build relationships with them. And it took 3 years to build a relationship with Kaiser before we got our first project. And from there, once you got the project and you were able to be responsive and deliver and consistent and were able to perform, you went from working on one project to multiple projects within the medical campuses to other medical campuses. And so just that continuing to build relationships is what grew our practice. Mm. And at that time, the practice probably grew to be about 15 people, which was a new learning experience. So with that excitement, you can imagine the challenge of growing a business, building a family, balancing life. So with Kaiser Permanente, there's a lot that I learned about how to really take care of your clients, nurture your clients, learn to balance life. And from there, there was something in that formula, in the development and the energy that went into building that we took that on to, some of the other clients that we worked with, which might have been developers and property managers in the medical field. The other thing we saw that happened is that project managers and clients that we were working with would go on to work with other clients. Mm-hmm. And if you built a good relationship with those individuals, then they would take you along with them. And that's what happened when we started to get our work over at USC, is they were people that we had worked with previously. So from Kaiser, then it went to USC, and we saw and felt kind of a momentum growing. And with that growth, we knew we had to take care of our own, company, our own people, and really pay attention to how we were building the firm in a way that could take care of our clients.
Amazing.
When I think back about it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, just as you very casually just saying, we had 15 people and I was building a family, and I think, whoa. I mean, just one of those, but to do both at the same time. I mean, that's the amazing thing I think about women, human beings, but particularly women. And what I've noticed with doing these interviews on this radio show is how much women take themselves for granted, because we just get on and do stuff.
Right.
And we forget sometimes, as we're climbing up the mountain, we forget sometimes to stop, press the pause button, stop, turn around and look down the mountain and realize how far we've come.
Right.
All we can see is how far we still have to go. We forget actually how far we've already come and the amazing achievements that we've already had. And women just think, oh, yeah, you know, well, you know, I employed 15 people and had this amazing contract which led on to X, Y, and Z, and I raised a family at the same time. You know, we have this amazing ability to be incredibly resourceful and do what is required, I think. Would you agree?
Yes. And as I was listening to you talk about that, there is something that I haven't talked about much, but I want to, because it does kind of enforce what you're saying and reflect what you're saying. In this process of building my business, I was married to an architect.
Ah.
So in the practice, you know, we built the business together. I had founded the practice, and he came into the practice once we had children. And of course, we were able to build a wonderful practice together, and two beautiful daughters that I'm so proud and so happy for at this point in my life. But in that process, there was a divorce.
Right.
And so with that divorce and that change, which was very difficult, was very hard, very emotional, there's a resilience now as I look back on it, that a lot of what I learned through, you know, the work that I did with other children, the traveling that I did and the work over to seas, the building the business, the challenges along the way showed me that you can move through a lot of challenges professionally, personally. Sometimes they cross over.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of business women I see today and in our practice that, you know, husbands and wives are building businesses together. They're building families together. And, you know, the hard part of it is when you have to dissolve those relationships. And that's not an easy thing. But I would say that it's been, you know, satisfactory to be able to look back to see how that happened. And with the sadness and with the challenges, that I would tell you today, I've been able to spin my practice off of a larger firm, reshape my practice, rebuild my name in the community, and still doing business with clients that have multiple projects and multiple properties, but now it's architects that I work for.
Ah, interesting.
You know, and so you just have to... You have to trust in yourself. You have to find the power somewhere deep within. You have to keep your grace in times that are really challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And to know that, you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And you don't do that all on your own. You do that by circling yourself with good friends, with family. And that's a message that I really want to put out there, because, you know, life isn't all pretty. It's not all about work. It's about how we as individuals decide that we want to navigate our lives and impart the good on our children and other people that are close to us.
I really love what you say. It's about how we navigate, isn't it? And any journey that you go on is rarely without its bumps, its hold-ups, its car crashes along the way. You know, you're running out of petrol, something wrong with the engine, you get a flat tire. You know, so any journey, very few are completely smooth without any bumps in the road at all. And it is about how you navigate that, isn't it? And how you, rather than you stalling and it paralyzing you, that you find a way over that hump, over that obstacle, and you find your way through it. And as a result of it, find resources within yourself that perhaps if you hadn't come across that bump, you would never have realized that you possessed. And you know, it's like the flip side of the coin. We only have light because we have dark. And, you know, without darkness, we would have no light. So it's about that balance and how we navigate our way through those less bright times, because they don't have to be dark. Do you believe or feel that it is how we respond. It's an interesting word, responsibility, and a lot of people will react negatively to responsibility because they think it's a burden. But actually, if you disseminate the word, it's your ability to respond. So do you think that it is down to your ability to respond in a certain way when you had those experiences that have allowed you to go on and achieve what you are achieving today?
Yeah, the ability to respond. You know, a couple things come to mind. You probably heard me talk about respect is really huge in my life, professionally and personally. Being responsible is also huge, and I think I haven't thought about it so much the way you had talked about it. But when you take on something like, you know, you take on being a mother, you take on being a wife, you take on being a business owner, you take on clients, you associate yourself with a community like IIDA, and you become, you know, a active member in it. I had been invited to be the president of it, probably because I took on the responsibility to get engaged.
Right.
So I was taught that you don't do something halfway.
Yeah.
And so I move through life, you know, sometimes maybe a little too seriously, but I'm proud of the responsibility that I've taken on and how I've carried it out.
Yeah, there's a lot of things kind of bubbling up in my mind. I'm going back to you say was managing that process of going through a breakdown of the marriage and keeping everything going, and not quite reinventing, but to a degree reinventing who you were. And it's moving into that different space, isn't it? And that brings me back, I guess, to the resilience that I witness in the women that I interview. And it's something to me that shines out with every single woman that I work with, that I train with, that I coach, that I interview, is that inner core of resilience that women have, that we have this core, almost like a core of steel going down our center, connecting us, and that we may wobble a little bit when life hits us, but we actually find our center again quite quickly. We take a deep breath and we brush ourselves off and we put our shoulders back and we think, okay, right, this is a new experience, so how am I going to be in this one then? And we move forward. It's women are absolutely awesome. Not saying men aren't, because they are as well. I don't want to be accused of saying, you know, men aren't, you know, human beings are awesome. But what I witness with women is an incredible deep core resilience.
When I hear you talk about that and kind of reflecting back on my life, I think what I would like to share is I have two daughters, and having them just young in their careers, I would reflect back on the fact that both of them went to an all-girls school, very highly academic, but a really beautiful at the core type of school. And my first daughter excelled. She's very directed, you know, knew what she wanted and excelled in that environment. We became, as parents, we loved that environment, knowing how challenging it was. We knew that my second daughter, we wanted Lindsay to also be in that environment. And she had a very different experience in that environment. And when we talk about resilience, I would say that the experience that my youngest daughter had at school with her struggles, with having to pick herself up and go on, with her parents, you know, circling her and helping guide her through, how the school itself was able to respond to not just the smart sister that was really directed and excelled on her own, but how they were able to respond to her sister who needed a little bit more guidance. We have seen Lindsay go off to college on the east where it's snowing coming from Southern California. Never whining, never, you know, what am I doing here? The weakness just turned into strength. And I talked to her today, even here in the business world of Los Angeles, in a company that she works for, which is a larger company with a lot of politics. It gives me the chance to remind her of the resilience that she has and how she was able in the hard times to pick herself up and dust herself off and go on. And through that, look at what she's achieved. And so I think, you know, I share that because that reminds me for myself that I can also do that.
Yeah.
And I think women are really good at being able to share those stories, share those experiences, and say, you know, I do have that power within me.
Yeah.
I do have that resilience within me.
And it's okay to have that power as well and not be intimidated or frightened of our power, but to recognize that we have it and to use it in a way that empowers other women around us. You know, it's, women are very good at sharing. We're very good at bonding. We're very good at telling stories around the campfire, you know, and helping other women. We were chatting before the interview about a couple of books you were saying about women sharing their stories, you know.
Right.
And we are very good at the grandmother stories, aren't we? And it's a way we continue that tradition of feminine strength, I think. What does the future hold for you? Where are you taking you and your career?
I look at it as my golden years. I get very excited about that, and I'm about ready to make another change.
Oh wow.
And that change for me I see as a new chapter in my life, which is taking me to Carmel by the Sea.
Wow.
And Carmel by the Sea is a little town up in the northern coast of California that has very special memories for me as a child, because we spent a lot of time there with girlfriends and family. And we're fortunate enough to have a little place up there. And over the last couple years, I've been looking at what kind of opportunities are up there for my practice. And I would tell you, a very good friend of mine and I, who have been in business together or have done business together down here on projects, is helping me kind of scope out what kind of opportunities are up in Carmel. So I'm looking to transition from Southern California, which has been a wonderful opportunity for business and to people that have their own practice, to a little quieter time in my life, a time when I can spend time with my mother, who's up there, my brother and his kids that are up there, and still have a connection both here to LA, where my youngest daughter is, and maybe travel back east to where my older daughter is. And so I'm, you know, today looking forward towards the end of the year, when hopefully I will have moved up to Carmel. I also have some business opportunities up there kind of percolating at this point. So it's that exciting, challenging time again. And it's a time that I'm looking at how I'm going to transition some of my client relationships here, how I'm going to bring in another person that I'm working with right now to maybe help me work with those clients down here while I'm up in Northern California. So there's, there's a lot of thinking and dreaming and logistics going on right now about how I'm moving into that next chapter. And so it's exciting and scary all at once. What can I say?
Well, and that's what's so great about life, I think, is that it, it, if we allow it to be, it can be both those things. And interestingly, the body can't tell the difference between fear and excitement, because the body reacts to both in exactly the same way. So actually, we can decide if it's scary or if it's exciting, because the body actually can't tell the difference. It's only our mind that will make the difference of whether this is something that's scaring us or something that's actually, yay, it's really exciting. So I always go for the yay, hey, rather than the scary, because my body reacts the same way anyway. But also, I think whenever we feel slightly uncomfortable, and I say to clients, that's a really, really good thing, because it means you're ready to go up to the next level.
Okay.
Because, you know, if you're feeling comfortable, it means you've plateaued. The moment you start thinking, oh, actually, that feels a bit itchy, I'm not sure I like the feeling of this, it means you're ready to go zoop, up the next step. And then that will feel comfortable. And then, you know, you keep doing this, keep climbing. So, I mean, how exciting. And I've been to Carmel. It is a very, very beautiful place.
Charming.
Isn't it? Absolutely, yeah. Charming. It's stunning.
And there's a lot of stories up there too, that I'm looking forward to reconnecting, and friends that we've built over the years as the kids have grown up. We've spent a lot of time up there, so we've got a lot of friends, and you know, one story I will tell you about moving up there that was so interesting is we had traveled to China before the Olympics were in China with a group up out of Carmel and Monterey, only to find out that a couple months ago when we set up a meeting with the Monterey Bay Aquarium, which is a potential client up there, the now COO is a lady that we traveled with to China.
Wow.
And so again, if you could just, you know, keep open to all of the opportunities and build the relationships, you know, there is this magic that can happen in the reconnection, the rebuilding, the continuing of a story. So I like what you said about staying connected to the excitement part of it rather than the fearful part of it. I'm going to remember that. Thank you.
There's another thing as well. If you take fear, if you take the initials F-E-A-R, it actually stands for false evidence appearing real. Okay. So fear doesn't actually exist. It only exists if we give it permission.
Okay.
Though maybe there are some instances where actually it's genuine and absolutely valid. But most things, when we're feeling fearful, it's actually our imagination playing tricks on us. So I just think, okay, my imagination is going to go towards the excitement side of this pendulum rather than the scary bit.
And that's one thing we can control, right?
Yeah.
How we decide to take that in.
Yeah, but most people actually will give that power and control away to the situation, thinking that they have no control of the situation. But actually, we have far more control than we give ourselves credit for. So if we just press that pause button just for a split second before we react and think, okay, what decision am I going to make? And I'm at a fork. Am I going to go down the excitement road, or am I going to go down the scary road? If we just take that second to stop before we react, we can actually make it a positive experience rather than a negative experience.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'll send the bill later, Pam. Well, I'm really, really excited for you. It sounds like a great new chapter unfolding in your life. And that whole kind of full circle, reconnecting with people, it is magic, actually. You know, and life is magical at times, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is. And I've driven the Pacific Road from San Francisco to L.A., a few times.
Mind.
So it's a lovely part of the US. It really is. And Carmel is magical in its own way. It does have a magic about it, doesn't it? It's truly lovely. So next time I'm over in the States, I shall come up for tea. Pam, thank you so much. It's been an absolute joy speaking with you and reconnecting with you again. So it's been a few years now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Katie. And thank you for what you're doing and spreading the power to women throughout the world.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. This has been Katie Day, and you've been listening to Creating Ripples. Listen in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. Women over 50 are the new future. We are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, passionate, courageous. In fact, we just rock.